Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, beautiful humans. If a professional, polished, well-edited podcast is what you're after, then move right on.
If, however, you love unfiltered banter, unedited bloopers, authentic heart sharing, and a very generous dash of holistic health education, then you're in the right place.
Hello, beautiful humans. Welcome back to the Holistic Health Podcast. It is Nat Douglas here with you. I am flying not solo, but without Amy today. And instead, I have an absolutely incredibly special episode for you with a wonderful human who has played many roles in my life and vice versa. She's been a business coach to me for seasons in my business, a friend for several years now, and an absolutely beloved client. And Ellie's story is one of extended conception. And during this episode, we do speak to pregnancy loss and IVF, amongst other things. And so I guess I just wanted to start off by giving a little disclaimer and reminder to you to be discerning when it comes to what you're choosing to listen to. So if you're not in the headspace to listen to something of this nature, then please honor that nudge. If, however, you are, then you're in for an absolute treat. To catch you up a bit to speed with this, Ellie and I have been working together for a few years now, quite a few years now, I would say. And, you know, we've been working on her hormone health, on her preconception journey, and now into pregnancy. And I don't think I really ever had a client on the podcast sharing their journey before, mostly because my work with clients is completely confidential, of course, and I really respect and honor the fact that health is deeply personal and not everyone wants to share their journey in that way. And, you know, no matter how known or big your profile is online, you should always feel comfortable and confident that your information is sacred and safe and really up to you to initiate the sharing on. Now, in saying that, Ellie has chosen to make parts of her journey public in service to other women who might also be navigating this kind of challenge. And for that, I am so deeply grateful. And it's been an absolute honor to have front row seats to her journey and to further witness the courage she's had in sharing the darkest parts with her audience and now ours. And, you know, if you feel safe in sharing your story, I think it's a beautiful gift to give. Gosh, I can't tell you how many stories I hear every week in clinic that are similar in nature, and that parallel to this, there is, I guess, a sense of loneliness on that journey that a lot of women experience. And I've often wished at times I could bring all of these beautiful humans together to show each other that they're absolutely not alone and that you're absolutely not alone. And I guess this is the power of story, right? Which is what I'm trying to bring to the podcast today. Now, we will get started in a minute, I promise. The other things I quickly wanted to share are that in this episode, I didn't want to focus on the practical aspects of what I had Ellie eating and supplementing with or testing, because truly that stuff, when you're struggling with fertility or extended conception, should ideally be personalized beyond the basic foundations, of course. Plus, I think the more important part of this journey to share publicly is the mental and emotional roller coaster that it is. And I have so much respect and draw so much inspiration from the way that Ellie has approached this and continues to approach this. And I know and trust that you will also find you'll walk away with a similar feeling that I always do when I'm talking to Ellie about all of this stuff. Now, for those who haven't already come across the wonderful Ellie Swift online, she is an online mindset and marketing coach who helps service-based business owners connect with their customers, shine online, and create life-changing results for both themselves and their clients. And you can check her out over on Instagram, which is at Ellie H. Swift, and you will also be able to navigate to her podcast, website, and offerings from there. Now that monumental intro is done, let's dive into this brilliant conversation. Ellie, welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm excited for this conversation.
Oh my God, I can't tell you how many times I've manifested us having this conversation, like through our journey when I was like, I think I even said to you a few times, nah, I can't wait till we talk about this. I can't wait till we talk about this publicly at the end.
I wholeheartedly remember receiving a Voxer message on this one day, and you were like, I know that we're going to be chatting on your podcast. I'm going to have the best testimonial for you one day.
Here it is.
Like a true coach, mentor, and also just the positive person that you are. And I mean, on behalf of everyone that is listening to this episode, I really do want to acknowledge like how grateful I am that you are opening up this conversation, because I do think that the conversation around extended conception, extended, you know, just time to conceive, IVF, miscarriage, all of that, I still think that there's a lot of shame around it and a lot of close to your chest kind of card playing, which is so fine in a lot of ways. And also, I know that the more other people's experiences are shared, the better off we are as women and couples going through this experience, because it can be really, really isolating as well. And I think where I just want to start is a little bit of just like context. So the first thing I wanted you to share with us, if you don't mind, is what was your relationship like with becoming a mum before you were actively trying to conceive? So like, were you someone who you're like, I always wanted to be a mum, or were you someone where that kind of slowly grew on you and then you decided to start trying?
So I was the kid that always had dolls and always talked about wanting to become a mum. And then I got into my 20s and, you know, I was very career focused and orientated. And sort of went through a period where I was like, okay, I feel like I know what motherhood looks like now and it's not for me yet, but I never, ever thought I don't want to be a mum. I was just very clear on the season that I wanted it in. So, you know, we're recording this at me being the age of 34. We started my fertility journey at, what was I, Nat? 31. Yeah. And always knew that I wanted to be a mom probably in my early 30s. So the timing and the desire was huge always. But I never ever wanted it in my 20s. And the reason I say that is because I think a lot of the conversation that Western medicine practitioners are having right now is start younger. Go younger, because we're all going older. And I think that that doesn't serve a lot of us as women, especially in the generation that we're currently in right now. A lot of us are working, a lot of us have careers, a lot of us have desires. And that was certainly my truth. I would have done more testing probably in my 20s. I feel like we'll talk about this. But I wouldn't change the fact that the timing was still very right for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. And did you, I guess, was struggling to try and conceive something that you anticipated? Like, did you have any thought in your mind prior to actively trying to conceive that, oh, this might be difficult for me? Or were you in that mindset of like, yep, we're just going to start trying, and in your Virgo style, where you're like, I'm going to schedule a baby in for this month.
Literally going to schedule a baby in for my early 30s in this particular star sign.
I was just about to say, what star sign?
So yes and no. There was a push-pull there for me. So I have always had longer cycles. So there was a little bit of a fear or a doubt in the back of my mind of, always had these longer cycles. Does this mean that there's some kind of problem for me? But my brain would always do the whole, well, you don't have a history of that in your family. Your mom felt pregnant easily. Like, you're very healthy. Your husband's very healthy. You've always been very healthy. So of course there won't be a problem. So again, instinctively there was, or intuitively, there was something there. It wasn't enough for me to feel like I needed to go and do something about it, which in hindsight, that's the thing I would do differently.
Yeah, totally understand that. And when you, to for everyone, just to catch up with a little bit of detail in between there, like when you came to see me, it was quite obvious relatively quickly to me as a practitioner that you had a very genetic style of PCOS, which I know from conversations that we've had and it's been reflected back to you, was also something that other actual medical professionals along the way had reaffirmed. And it's funny because it's almost, you know, I think sometimes the assumption with PCOS is that, oh, it's always that someone is overweight, which Ellie is absolutely not and never has been. You're very naturally just a light, thin person, just genetically speaking. And I also think that there's a lot of an assumption that it is purely always driven by not so great lifestyle choices, which again, like reflecting on what you just said there, even when you came to me from a diet and lifestyle perspective, there was really like very fine tuning that was happening. It wasn't like you were coming with having like massive amounts of sugar, terrible insulin resistance, not moving your body, being stressed out of your eyeballs. Like you were one of those people who it was a matter of refinement and then an unfortunate, like, you know, genetic predisposition to this PCOS type situation that was happening. And I feel like that's important to name up, and because of exactly what I said there, that there's a lot of assumptions that can be made in the fertility space and as it relates to PCOS. And also I think that a lot of women in my experience that have been diagnosed with PCOS also, they either fall into one of two camps. They either have this belief that absolutely they're going to struggle to conceive and they may never be able to, which evidently is not true, or the opposite of that, they kind of, I don't know, it's not on their radar at all that there might be some challenges, and the truth is it's somewhere in between. Yeah. So from your, like, again, just a few more, like getting us up with the timeline and the context of this before we dive in a little bit further. Can you share for everyone what your conception journey looked like in terms of like what processes you went through to get to where you are now? And I know in a nutshell it's so hard because you've had the biggest journey, but do your best.
I got this. Can I just add to something you said just there? Because you spoke about it being very genetic PCOS. And something that I think is so useful there is that you said that about it being very genetic PCOS. You were the first person to tell me that. And it was revolutionary information for me. And then it was also almost that exact phrase was something that our IVF doctor also said. That didn't affirm it. You'd said it, so I knew it was true. But again, that was just her saying that as well. And I was very fortunate in that my East meets West modalities really supported one another. And I think that we did a very active job, you and I, Nat, of making sure that that was the case. And we might talk about that a little bit more. But I didn't know it was genetic. So I didn't know, for example, like my mum hadn't had those issues. It skipped a generation. So we found out that my grandma had likely had quite a lot of issues. And it was sort of just through my mum and I doing some digging that we discovered that. And so when we hear the word genetic, if someone had said to me, oh, do you have any genetic factors? I would have been like, no, none. So I just wanted to make that point, because the genetic conversation is an interesting one, because you kind of think it's something that will just be there evident on the surface. But for me, we had to do some digging. Mm. Okay. So timeline. So husband and I got married.
We're a lot of baby making. 10 out of 10 amazing human.
He's the best. So where a lot of, you know, classic stories begin. We got married. I was 31. So a couple of months after the wedding, I came to Nat. So Nat and my relationship history is you were a client first, became a friend. From there, I always knew when I wanted to go down this journey that I was going to come to you because you're the best. And so we started working together a couple of months after I got married. I think I came to you at that point and you said preconception is usually something that takes around like 3 months. Just putting that out there, maybe you don't want to try for the first 3 months and we kind of use this time to get optimal. Very smart advice. I didn't listen. Started trying. It was the right advice, of course, but I was like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to start trying. Started trying, nothing happened. Kept trying, nothing happened. Made a commitment that we would basically try for around about 12 months naturally before we went down the road of, any additional medical support. I have a husband who is a very 21st century man. Who was like, this is not just your responsibility. Let's also, you know, do all of this together, which I say that, but ladies, as it freaking should be. And so like get your hubbies to, or your partners or your men to listen into this episode as well, because there is still a wild preconceived notion that this is a woman's problem. And in fact, I think it's 1/3 of all infertility issues are male factor infertility. Please correct me if I've got that stat wrong. Now, you know it better than I do, but you know, it's just wild to think that it's just a women's issue, because it's really not. He started that process as well. He had just come off a period of shift work. And so that was a really cool thing for us to go through for his health to start this natural testing with you, which all this means is that we did blood tests and we checked a whole bunch of different, you know, levels and markers. So we were testing things like iron, we were testing things like, you know, all my, you know, fertility hormones. We were testing for any, thyroid issues. Like, we were testing all of those things that you want to test. And a lot of the time, if you go to a GP for testing, they will not do even like 1/10 of the testing that your naturopath's going to do. I don't know if Nat's going to, if you're going to toot your own horn around that. So I will. And so we did all of that testing over a 12-month period, and we were finding that my cycles were not budging in the way that we wanted them to. We were seeing some shifts, but because you very much had called it as like, this is a little bit more genetic than this, we weren't seeing the kind of shifts we wanted to, and I hadn't fallen pregnant. So from there, we enlisted some Western medicine support. I went and saw an IVF doctor here in Western Australia, Dr. Tamara Hunter, who also incredible woman, and had a great experience working with her. We started with ovulation induction. So we did 3 rounds of ovulation induction and still in that time did not fall pregnant. From there, we moved into IVF. We in total did 4 rounds of IVF. We fell pregnant with our first bubba on our 3rd IVF round. We lost that baby and we found out at our 8-week scan that we lost that baby. And then we fell pregnant on our 4th IVF round, which is the baby girl that I'm carrying now. And I am currently 6-7 months pregnant, 27 weeks.
Exciting. Yeah. And it's just, enough? Huh?
Was that nutshell enough?
Yeah, that was a great nutshell. I was like, how's she going to summarize this? It's been a wild time and I've only like, I haven't had to live in your body, but it has been, I mean, as your friend and your practitioner, I mean, I feel emotionally involved at the best of times with clients who aren't also friends. And with this journey, it's just, I remember getting butterflies when you told me that you were pregnant that first time and feeling giddy with excitement. And I remember asking you permission if I could tell my husband because I had to share it with someone. I'm like, of course. And then equally, I remember, and I'm, you know, tearing up now thinking about it. I remember crying actual tears when you shared with me that you had miscarried. And then again, the whole process of happy, giddy excitement when you told me you were pregnant the next time. And it's, you know, and I think I share that because also for the practitioners listening, just to normalize getting deeply involved in someone's journey. And, you know, I just think you've had such an amazing, like, I don't know if attitude's the right word. I feel like it goes deeper than that. Mindset, you know, just, it's just been incredible through it, despite the natural ups and downs. And that's what I also want to delve into a little bit more. Yeah. But what I'm curious about is, what do you feel like have been the hardest parts of navigating this extended, you know, extended conception journey for you?
So now that we've kind of got the nuts and bolts out of the way and spoken to the overview of that, I think that it's really, really important to just honor and acknowledge that this was the hardest journey of my life. You know, it has been, you know, it was a 2.5 year journey, and it's like nothing I've ever experienced. And I still struggle to put into words the level of grief that you feel during this journey. You know, I remember saying to Che at one point, I think there's only one person right now who is in our immediate world who maybe has some idea of what we're going through. Mm-hmm. And he said, who are you talking about? And I said, I'm talking about your mum, because she at the time was navigating putting her partner into care who had dementia, who she was slowly losing, and she was grieving the loss of her partner slowly over time. Mm-hmm. And that is what an infertility journey feels like. You get negative pregnancy test after negative pregnancy test, and you're grieving the loss of a baby that you've never had, but that you feel biologically, mentally, physically, emotionally, that is meant to be in your arms. Mm. And when you feel that at both an emotional level, a mindset level, a primal level, it feels like something is deeply wrong, that you can't fall pregnant, deeply wrong in so many ways. And you still have to show up in your life. It's not like when you're grieving the loss of a person and, you know, we have a funeral, we have a passing, we have a closure. People don't know that you're going through this. And so for me, you know, I, running a business, I was going up and back to the clinic, you know, 3 to 4 times a week in my, in the depths of IVF, I was navigating probably 30 hours of admin a week of just going up and back to the clinic each day, plus, you know, doing all the injections, taking, you know, the 60 vitamins that I was taking.
Not that anyone's counting.
Right. Like, you know, just the level of things you're doing. And I also want to add to this that I feel very privileged that I had the opportunity to give this journey the nudge that it needed for me, and that I wanted to be able to give it, because I was adamant that I was getting my baby and I trusted that I was getting my baby. But you are flying blind. And even if you know your condition, even if you know what is needing to happen in your body and the changes that are being, you know, needed to be made, there are so many unknowns, and there is still the magic of conception that occurs that you cannot control. But I just want to really speak to that piece around grief, because for me, it wasn't about, oh, I'm just someone who loves to control things in my life and this is something I can't control. Like, that to me actually felt really like a superficial way of people explaining it. I was like, no, that's not it. It's deep grief. It's trauma, and it's compounding trauma, which leads to things like PTSD. Che and I had a conversation the other day where we both shared with one another that we can take ourselves back to the moment that we miscarried that first time, and we can feel every sensation in our body of that moment on recall, on demand, which if you ask any psychologist is exactly what PTSD is. And so again, just really want to normalize how psychologically full on this process is. It is, you know, they're the things that were hardest for me, is the compounding negative tests, the miscarriage was my absolute lowest of low. The not knowing was so challenging, the waiting, the physically taking hormones, you know, having everyone around us moving on with our life and us feeling like we were in an absolute time loop and that we just couldn't move forward or progress because we wanted this thing that we couldn't seem to conjure into our world. It's a big process.
Yeah. And you had a lot of close people to you fall pregnant during that time as well. I remember that there were multiple family and friends who were sharing that they had, you know, fallen pregnant. You were going and visiting, you know, nieces or nephews. I think maybe nephew.
Both.
Yeah. And that just would have been astronomically difficult, you know, feeling your own grief and also knowing you and knowing that like family is in the top of tops of your values. That must have been really, really challenging. How did you navigate, but two parts to this question. Like the first part is going back to what you shared there around, you know, those negative pregnancy tests and even, you know, that feeling of getting your period when you're not wanting your period because you want to be pregnant. Was there anything at all that you did or that helped you move through those, you know, moments of grief, knowing that they happened over and over again? Was there anything at all that allowed that to be processed in your body?
You answered that question in the way you asked it, which is that I allowed it. I allowed myself to grieve. I allowed myself to process. And in my experience, most people don't. You know, there's a feeling of, well, I've just got to keep going. I've just got to show up again. I've just got to ride this out. I've just got to go back to work tomorrow. I've just got to pretend like nothing's happened, because you sort of feel like maybe has anything happened, because there's no external markers to the rest of the world that you're going through something so big. So I really allowed myself to feel it all. I cried. I can recall nights where I would wake up at 1 a.m. and I would just cry for hours and hours and let my body really shed and grieve in the way that it needed to. And because I allowed myself to process so fully, that then meant that I was able to release what I needed to physically so that I could move and step into my next cycle with intention, purpose, ability to show up, not because I was masking how I truly felt, but because I'd processed it. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I got a lot of support. So I obviously had you, Nat. You know, you are the person who rode with me the whole journey start to end, more so than anyone else. And then I enlisted support people along the way. So I worked with a life and fertility coach for a little while there, someone who had navigated that process for 8 years herself, and she was able to give me some tools and strategies. I had a couple of girlfriends that I really lent into during that time and just allowed myself to receive their love, you know, more than ever before. We brought our families into the process, not every time or with every single thing. It can be hard to do that. I think if you expect people who have not been on this journey to understand it, you will be disappointed again and again, because there's still not enough mainstream education around it. But most of all, I really lent into, what do I need? How can I support myself during this time? And, you know, coming back to that trust of, I truly believe that there is a child that wants to be in our family, and I am committed and tenacious enough to show up until this baby enters our world, and I will do what I need to do to make that happen. Yeah. So That was very much like the how I navigated it piece. And then in terms of family, yeah, so family is my highest value. And the thing for me, I know a lot of women, and this is, you know, if you're listening to this and this is you, there's nothing wrong with this. If you experience any kind of jealousy or sadness or whatever comes up, if you see other people fall pregnant, I didn't have that experience so much. And it's probably because I coach women every day. So my brain's really wired to celebrate other women. What I did find was when it was in my family, it meant that I didn't feel safe in my family anymore. Everything becomes a trigger to being a reminder that you yourself are not yet pregnant. And so I didn't feel safe being in my family because there would be conversations about pregnancy, conversations about birth, and it was just constant reminders, you know, those moments where you're like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, you know. So that was what I found most challenging, is that Che and I became very isolated for, you know, up to a couple of years. And as people who are very social, as people who really love their people, that was really difficult. We weren't traveling as much. It was post-COVID, and we sort of stopped traveling. We weren't seeing our loved ones as much, and we became really insular for a while there, which of course that in itself then really compounds and leads to, you know, more of those feelings of isolation and loneliness. So it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it? And I often think about this balance between, you know, other people's experience and your own playing out at the same time, in the contrast of what you've shared there of like people in your family going through pregnancy, going through birth, or talking about that in a really like joyful, light, fun, positive kind of way. And then the contrast to that experience that you're having as a couple or internally, and trying to navigate that on both sides of the coin, in terms of, you know, how much is, you know, your own responsibility to go, okay, I know that I'm not going to feel, you know, okay or safe in these conversations or in these contexts, versus how much is it on those of us who are just, you know, around women, around couples who maybe are of an age where we might think that if they wanted to have children, they might be trying. And I always find this tricky. I mean, as a deeply compassionate person who is very aware of how many people do really struggle, I'm always super mindful of the way that I talk about pregnancy, birth, conception, all of fertility, all of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I guess as someone who has, you know, has now seen both sides of that, of being on that side of the struggles with fertility and deep in the journey, and now someone who is pregnant and in that space where you want to be, has it changed at all the way that you have conversations about pregnancy, fertility, you know, starting a family? Like, is there anything that you think is helpful to know as someone who is in the support network or just around women who might be on that journey of trying to conceive?
Yeah, I share about my pregnancy on social media now. And when I announced it, I said, you know, I'm going to share and talk about this because I'm not going to diminish, obviously, my lived experience, but I also want to just really acknowledge anyone who is going through the journey right now. And every now and again, I'll still share, you know, like posts or whatever it might be about people navigating that time, or I'll mention my own experience because it's still so raw and fresh. There's definitely like an awareness around, as you said before, if I was like at a barbecue or something, I wouldn't just ask somebody if they were falling pregnant, mm-hmm. or like planning on having a baby or whatever, you know. I'm very mindful in those conversations. The other thing though that often surprises people is that I never want to be a cautionary tale for people. So I don't want people to look at my story. And I've had a few people mirror to me, oh, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to fall pregnant though. And I'm like, no, 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 no. Let's just
let's just get one thing straight. I'm still the minority. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still the minority. The majority of people will fall pregnant unassisted. Does that mean that you're going to have the opportunity to have like the best, healthiest baby? Even if I could fall pregnant easily, I would do preconception care, which is why I came to you. You know, I wanted to optimize my health and well-being before falling pregnant. So even if it's something that is more easeful for you, I would always recommend that. But the reality is that the majority of people will still fall pregnant unassisted and it not be a problem. And so I really, really don't, or I never want to be the person who's like the cautionary tale of, no, well, don't just assume. Like, that's just not the energy or the vibe I ever want to put out in the world. So there's that as well on the flip side, which I think people just wouldn't really expect.
Yeah, that's so true. And in terms of like in just circling back to those moments where you had people in your family fall pregnant, give birth, or friends in your network or, you know, that have fallen pregnant and given birth, or they are communicating that to you. I know what I would do in that situation, but I'm also not someone who's been through an extended conception journey. What felt most helpful in the way that someone would communicate that to you? Like, how, obviously it's a mixed bag of emotion for everyone, but as someone who has been on the receiving end of that news, what felt like the kindest and most easy to digest way of receiving that news from someone else that's close to you?
So I'll give an example. We miscarried, and then 2 weeks later, we found out that my brother was pregnant, my brother and sister-in-law. And then a week after that, we found out that Che's brother and sister-in-law were pregnant. They both very respectfully and lovingly, and I should also mention, these are our best friends, like our, you know, our siblings are our besties. They very respectfully and lovingly texted us to let us know. I think that, you know, it's always going to break your heart, and it brings tears to my eyes even thinking about it now. Like, Che and I hated that that was the way we found out about, you know, our now nephew and niece who have literally just been born in the last 3 weeks. Mm. We hate that that is how we found out, because you want it to be something where you can really celebrate together and it gets to be joy. But at that time for us, you know, I received the news both times and burst into tears. Mm. Because what world were these two babies due that we would be auntie and uncle to when it was supposed to be our baby that was being born at that time? That was a very, very big low point for us. It was very challenging to rationalize that as somebody who has always believed that the universe is on her side. And so to answer your question there, you know, the text message, like giving people space to process is really great. And just saying like, we know that you're going to be so happy for us. Like, both our siblings were like, we know you guys are going to be so happy for us. And like, we know that, of course. And we just wanted to give you this information in a way where you had the opportunity to process it yourself. So give people that time, give them the space, even if it's your bestie, even if it's your sibling, even if it's someone who you know is going to love you as well. Unfortunately, if someone is on an infertility journey and you are pregnant, it's just not about you and your news. It's just not. It's about delivering it in a way that's going to serve them in their time of grief.
Yeah, I think that's so important, isn't it? It's that not taking it personally piece, because exactly like that the two truths can be there at the same time of this, exactly. I'm so happy for you, and also I am, you know, feeling heartbroken, and it is amplifying grief, sadness, anger, shame in me. And I think it's that piece around just letting it all just be there. And the best way, I feel, exactly as you said, that people can support you is not taking things personally and being able to give you space. And yeah, it sucks. And also I think that at the end of the day, it's the kindest thing that you can do. I know that we've spoken about just how amazing Che is, and I actually really want to ask you, what do you feel like some of the things or some of the ways that Che has shown up for you have been super supportive? Like, for the partners out there listening, what do you feel like has really helped you in either, you know, ways he has handled certain situations, little things that he's done? Like, what has felt just like the biggest exhale, or when you reflect back on your journey, if you were to be, you know, be able to share with partners what they could do, yeah, what would you say to that?
It's so funny because whenever I have this conversation, it's always when Che's mentioned that I start crying. Mm-hmm. You know, when I recorded our podcast episode or my podcast episode around this, it was the same. Like, the minute we start talking about my husband, I start crying. And it's because he showed up for me and for us and supported me and us, you know, as a couple so fully during that time. And you just hear the stories of how it truly is something that can make or break couples. Mm-hmm. And I share that not to scare anyone that's going through it, but rather I think when you know that it is something that is so big, the best thing that you can do from the get-go is decide that you're going to lean in and do it together as a team, because you have two choices. And I really believe that it's the precursor to parenthood. You decide you're doing it together as a team every step of the way, or you become really isolated from one another and it creates this big rift in your relationship. Mm-hmm. So for Che, the thing that he did really well, and this is definitely the bit to play to any of your partners, is that he really considered what do I need, you know, as me, Ellie, and then what did he need to also do in the journey? So like I mentioned before, he didn't just go, oh, this is a woman's issue. He went, well, this is a partner situation. What do we both need to do here? And so he did all the appropriate testing. He came with me for the lifestyle shifts and changes. And I want to articulate, and he would do this if he were here, that didn't mean that there weren't moments when he didn't find it hard or frustrating. You know, I remember us having conversations where I think you now were like, maybe we lower your caffeine intake a little or whatever. And that doesn't mean that he was just like, oh, yes, of course, Nat, whatever we need to do. Like, he was still kicking and screaming about some of that stuff. Like, of course. And so I just want to normalize that as he would if he were here. You know, it doesn't mean he's this like perfect human. But he showed up and did the things that he needed to, you know, within reason for his side. And then in addition to that, he really held it down as the masculine in our relationship of supporting me emotionally. So the thing that he found so challenging and the thing that still gets him is seeing me so broken in so many moments. I'm a pretty self-sufficient human. I'm a pretty resourceful gal. And there were moments where I was truly, truly broken. Mm-hmm. And he just knew that, as you do in a partnership, when one of you is down and out, the other has to rally, you know, and he really did. You know, we have different love languages. So for him, sometimes that was, he would just be in that kitchen making me dinner and so that I could scream in the bathroom. Mm. Or, you know, he would be asking me what the next step needed to be, even if I wasn't ready for it, because that was his way of showing that he cared. And so again, I share those specifics because I think that it's really important that we don't put pressure on our partners to show up a certain specific exact way, especially if we're not telling them exactly what that is, but rather the demonstration that they're trying to be there for us, and then continuing to lean in and communicate with one another. Well, what do you need? How can I support you better? You know, I didn't want to take my own injections. I didn't want to do that myself because I don't like needles. He administered every single one of my IVF injections, and there were over 100 that were administered. He came to many appointments with me, would text message every time I was in, you know, getting a blood test, which for a while there was every day. So, you know, those sorts of things. It listened to me when I said, I'm tired. I don't feel like myself. I'm exhausted. I can't keep doing this. But then also reflected back as the mirror to me, our baby's coming. We got this. We're going to go again. To know that he was alongside me for, we will do this until we need to. We will go down every path. We will knock on every door. To know that I had that was everything. So again, if you're playing this to your partners and you're a partner listening, like, just highlight to them, I'm here for you. What do you need? We're doing this together. We're a team.
So important, isn't it? That team part. Otherwise, you're right. It's drives a wedge, and the less communication there is, the bigger that wedge gets. And I think you're far better off to communicate clumsily and like messy than to not say anything out of fear of saying the wrong thing. Because I think not saying anything or having that paralysis is just, it just sends the wrong message. So I always encourage, you know, the partners to some of my clients who are going through this journey to just say, if they're not sure what to say, just say, I really don't know what to say right now, but I'm really sorry that this is how you're feeling. What can I do to support you?
Totally.
And it's just the way of breaking down that wall and getting through that isolation. And don't underestimate the power of just sitting with someone while they cry, while they scream, while they vent. And I think, as much as a stereotype as it is, I do feel like, in my experience, men do love to fix, and that's totally fine. And also just knowing that, you know, for a lot of people going through this journey, you can't fix it as a support person, but what you can do is hold and validate and support and protect the bubble if that's what needs happening. And I can hear that that's what a lot of your support people did really well, and it didn't take away all the heartbreak and the pain that you've had to experience. And also, it's still been helpful, like both those truths existing at the same time.
Exactly. And you made a good point there. Like, as the support person, get your own support as well. You know, like, you need to be supported. I mean, there were so many times where I would still ask Che how he was, like, how are you? What do you need? Because he was in it with me. You know, I was going through it physically, but he was still in it with me. It was impacting his life. I think because I do have such an incredible man, I often, you know, look at this journey of preconception, extended conception, pregnancy, and I'm like, I feel for you because I get loved on, I get doted on, I get so much support, and you don't get as much. And so, you know, look after your partners as well. Like, we need to lean into one another.
Absolutely. And I'm like, as I can't help but put my practitioner hat on and go, like, circle, highlight, underline the fact that fertility is a two-person job. And as you've already shared, there were things in your situation as a couple that required Che to also change and step up, and that he did. And also, I feel like I'm forever emphasizing that to females as well, or like my clients, because there is still this unfortunate assumption that, oh, it's, you know, it's me. And I think that gets sometimes, in my experience, doubled down on when there is something that is an issue from, in this example, like the female partner. Like, let's say that, you know, I picked up that there was some PCOS there or some issues there on your end. A lot of the time, As much as I try and create a situation where this doesn't happen, the assumption is, well, we've found what's wrong, therefore, like, totally. This is just what we have to fix. Whereas my encouragement is always, never investigate one person's health, because if anything, my reframe on that is like, well, if playing the very pragmatic approach, if arguably person A, or the female in this couple, has some fertility challenges, then we want to make sure that person B is picking up the slack as much as possible.
Really?
So that as a team, because that's what it is, you're getting the best chance possible. So I really, I reframe that a lot for people, probably much to their disappointment, because I know it's easier to just focus on one person at a time. But the reality is it's a joint journey.
100% agree.
Yeah. Well, I have one more question for you. And I feel like this is a little bit more of a lighthearted and exciting one. And I just adore you, and I adore your approach to business and your perspective on life. And this comes from actually not that long ago. I remember sharing with you, I said, oh, Ellie, like, I feel like I'm in a place where I'm like, I do desire to be a mum. And I shared with you, oh, but I'm just feeling a little bit nervous about like how it's going to change my business, how it's going to change my freedom that I value so much. And you just had like the best perspective shifts as per usual. And so it prompted this question for me that I'd love you to share your answer with. So as someone who is an absolute superstar marketing and mindset coach with a thriving online business, I'd love to get you to share your perspectives on moving into motherhood and business ownership. Because I was really, your perspective shift has really actually helped me. And just for anyone listening, I'm not pregnant. I'm just preempting this. And I thought your answer will help others who may be in a similar boat.
Playing in the in-between exciting period. Okay, well, I can't remember what I said to you, so I might give a different answer right now. So if I do, please tell me what I said.
I will quote Ellie back to Ellie.
Please do. So look, I truly believe the minute I came into starting to think about motherhood, you know, as being a thought for me, which now is, you know, like 4 years ago, I started anchoring into the belief that babies bring abundance. Like, I really, really believe that babies bring abundance because they bring more love, they bring more joy. And that is not to say that if you're in an extended conception period that you don't get to create all of that abundance now. There's benefits to business being an extended conception. What can I say? You got to take the good with the bad. I set up my business in so many ways over the last couple of years, which will only support me. But babies bring abundance. You know, I just deeply trust that you're never going to get something that you can't handle, and that you've got this opportunity to be both an incredible present mama and an amazing business owner. And if you are somebody who has had any kind of challenges or, you know, been through anything on this journey, then you know what resilience looks like and you know how to lean into that. And so that's going to be an added bonus for you. But truly, like, all of it just gets to amplify and be even better. And I've coached so many clients now through those seasons of motherhood and maternity leave. And so I only speak to that experience, of course, because I'm just coming into my third trimester, not yet a mama. Well, a mama, but not yet a mama with a baby earth side. But having coached and worked with those women, I really believe that it actually all just gets better because you're so much more discerning about what you want. You're so much clearer on what business actually, like great business actually looks like to you. And so for me personally, I'm so excited for this next season of motherhood and business because I really believe that it's just all going to get bigger and better than I could ever imagine.
I love that. And yes, you've quoted exactly what I was going to Ellie quote back to you. So
good.
Nailed it. We've got consistency. Yeah. Oh, so good, my love. Well, thank you so much for sharing just all of your heart and your journey with us. And I'd also really encourage people to go and check out the podcast episodes that you did on your podcast. I'll link them in the show notes because you did such a great journey of diving in even deeper than we have today and sharing on a whole bunch of things that was just so beautiful to listen to. Even though I've been with you through the journey, I still loved listening to those episodes so much. And before we wrap up, is there anything happening in your boring old world over there that you want to share about or just direct people to where they can check out more of your content?
Absolutely. So look, if you're a podcast listener, definitely go back over. So my podcast is The Scalable Freedom Show. If you scroll back to December of last year, you will see those episodes that Nat's referencing. She's probably going to pop them in the show notes. I can see her typing right now. She's going to pop those in the show notes for you. So definitely check those out. If you're listening and you're a business owner, I work with coaches, creatives, and consultants who run 6 and 7 figure businesses. At this present moment that this episode is being released, I'm in launch for a program called the Mastermind Model. So this is something that is very specific to anyone who is building, scaling a mastermind or a group program. So if that is you, come over and check that out. I would love to answer any questions that you have in DMs on Instagram. You'll be able to find me at Ellie H. Swift. Otherwise, if this resonated with you in any way, just come over and let me know. I'm always here for a chat, a hello, to witness you if you're in this journey, whatever it might be.
Thanks, my love.
Thank you for having me. I've loved this conversation.
Hello, beautiful friends. Before we log off for the day, I wanted to quickly jump back in here and remind you that as we both, Ellie and I, had shared in that episode, preconception care is absolutely a key non-negotiable if you want to optimize your fertility and have the best possible pregnancy and beyond. And it really is I really see it as a proactive approach to health that recognizes that there is such an interconnectedness of your health, your fertility, and the outcomes of pregnancy, as well as the influence on your baby's health for the rest of their life. And that can sound a little bit big and a lot of pressure and a little bit intimidating, but it really doesn't have to be that way. I think if you have access to and really practice the foundations of good preconception care, it can take you just such a long way. And so with that in mind, I wanted to remind you that I have created a wonderful practical guide called Sacred Seeds, which is a holistic preconception care guide or toolkit that is very much based on the principles of naturopathic and nutritional medicine. And it's really tailored to empower you on your path to motherhood. And you can access that guide on my website, or there's also a link in the show notes or in my Instagram bio. And it's a really affordable way to have my expert recommendation and guidance in your corner on this just such special, special journey. The other thing that I will remind you of is that if what you're after is actually more tailored one-to-one support, then you are also so welcome to book in a one-to-one consultation with me. And you can do that again via my website or from my Instagram bio. You'll be able to navigate there as well. And I would love to have a chat. If you're not sure what the best option is for you, but you know that you need support in this context, then the other option that I'd encourage you to make use of is that I do offer a very limited number of free 20-minute assessment calls, which is basically just a chance for you to have a free complimentary chat with me, share a little bit more about your story, what you are wanting support with, and then for us to just work out together what the best steps, next steps forward would be for you if that's what you chose. So please feel free to book that in there. Again, same link in my bio on Instagram, on my website, or again, there is a link in the show notes. Thank you so, so much for joining in on this wonderful conversation. please share it with a friend or a family member or a colleague or someone who might benefit from hearing what Ellie has to say. I am so passionate about getting these conversations more and more out there. And if you are currently experiencing extended conception and or you have been through an infertility or a fertility challenge journey, my heart goes out to you. And I'm so sorry that this has been your experience. And I truly hope that your baby is just around the corner. All right, friends, I will leave it there. And I can't wait to speak with you again next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Holistic Health Podcast with Amy and Nat.
If you loved this episode, then make sure you share it on Instagram and give us a tag.
If you'd like to help us spread the holistic health message far and wide, then we would also so appreciate it if you left a rating and review. This helps us more than you know.
And don't forget to come and say hi over on Instagram. See you next week.